Welcome to Toy Power. This is the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. Hi, I'm Trent, and it's great to have your company today for episode 49. This week on Toy Power, we're going to discuss all the big news stories and maybe touch on a little bit of fake news. And then we're going to take a look at the Netflix TV show, The Toys That Made Us. Joining me today in the Toy Power studio, we've got Ben.
G'day all.
Frank.
Hey, hey.
And Darren.
Hello, one and all. Thank you for coming back for another year of Toy Power, and Happy New Year to you all.
Yeah, Happy New Year. It is a new year, and we've got a new form of coming at you from Toy Power. So hopefully we'll see you on, what is it called? YouTube?
The Tube of the Tube.
The video thing.
That thing that makes the videos. All right. Well, we'll head straight into latest news, because there's a fair bit to talk about.
This is the part where I normally play a transition, but my filing system is pretty average, so I do not have it.
Well, that's saying a lot, because you're usually impeccable with your filing.
It's a new year, it's a new me.
I was just going to say, it's about the first time this has ever happened. Yeah. Frank's not one to sort of have a missing file.
No, that's it. So we're going to kick off with some news, or some tweeted news out of NECA, and this was some information that sort of passed me by, and I think I had to sort of go back a few days later and go, wait a minute.
What just happened?
What was that? So, Frank,
yeah,
take us through
that. There was a tweet from NECA. They do this thing where it's not like an AMA Ask Me Anything, but every now and then they'll just respond out of the blue to a fan's question, and it was an innocuous question like, hey, what are you going to be showing at toy fairs? Is there any chance of seeing any Turtles products? And they responded with going, oh, yeah, maybe Shredder or the Foot Soldier. Depends on which one is closer to production. Now,
what?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, I was so excited hearing Shredder. That's, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
this to you as soon as I heard about it,
yeah,
actually.
Man, oh,
Shredder 82 is going to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was the first sort of official confirmation. There was the tease at San Diego.
The bandana, the headband for the Foot Soldier.
Yeah. And so you just go, is it an accessory pack? What is it? So yeah, nice confirmation. And Toy Fair is, what time of year is that normally?
February.
February, yeah.
So looking forward to some.
Round the corner.
I know we will flip a coin, take some bets as whether it's going to be Shredder or the Foot Soldier. I know where Ben's going to land on this, but
But given the fact that we did see the bandana, maybe the Foot Soldier's a little bit closer to final.
It's certainly possible.
I'd love to see just an even prototype sculpt, even of the Shredder, just to give us a really cool idea of what he may look like.
I tend to think it's probably going to be the Foot Soldier for similar reasons to what Ben's given, but I also think there's a logic in holding an A-lister like Shredder back.
Until it's
because
done.
He's got to be such a, you know, holy grail for so many fans.
Yeah.
And that, so I see the Foot Soldier is probably the one to do. It'll build the excitement and the momentum for something like Shredder down the line. To clarify, when we are looking at New York Toy Fair, I believe it is 4 weekends. So 4 weeks from now, I believe it's on. It's pretty close.
Yeah, and we have to be made something really clear in case, you know, you sort of don't know the history of Shredder in toy form. There's never been a movie one accurate version of Shredder. The closest we've got is in the Secret of the Ooze line where we had the Super Shredder.
That's exactly right. That is literally the Playmates vintage movie style Shredder. That is the closest thing. And obviously it's the final sequence of the second film. So, yeah, this would be holy grail for a lot of people. Just like I think doing a Tatsu figure could really impress people too, because he's never been included in the figure line.
I'll tell you what, it's going to be one expensive army builder for those people who love to get all their multiple Foot Soldiers.
I had the same thought, and I wondered whether or not that could be another reason why NECA might bring him now, because if even a fraction of people do that, that money can be ploughed straight back into the line to pay for things further down the line. So hopefully a lot of people have the space and the money to army build, because it'll keep the line healthy.
Oh, for sure. All right, let's head over to some Masters of the Universe Classics news. So Brian Flynn from Super 7 sent out an update about a week ago, and as part of the email that he sent out, he showed some final in-package images of all the 8 figures that we're expecting to ship now for both Club Filmation and the Classics line. Figures, if you don't know, they were previously released as, or previously sold via a pre-order. And the sort of rough time frame that he's given us now is 20 February 2018 for them to start shipping from Super 7's warehouse. Brian said, as you know, this was a made-to-order release, and we took extra time to get the figures done correctly to our quality standards. I mean, it's pretty exciting that they're now finally produced in package on a boat over to the Super 7 warehouse. What were our thoughts when we saw the images?
Triclops. Triclops, too bright.
So what do you go into bright. That? So, what is the colour scheme of Triclops?
The issue is, the colour scheme that they advertised to the fans was a very dark green, almost olive green, and his skin colour was quite tanned as well. And people were pretty quick to say, what the hell does this look like? So, you know, all the other fit characters are so bright in colours, and Triclops was very dull, so to speak. And upon looking at some of the screenshots of your of the, you know, Filmation cartoon, he does in fact look quite olive and darker skinned and things. So everyone was pretty, you know, they accepted that. Okay, cool, we're getting it. That was the one that was advertised to us. That was the one that we all got used to. That was the one we thought we were going to get. And then now, we've got final packaging, and it's almost a neon green, the same as the original toy version. Toy colours, and everyone's cracking the, you know, cracking it that hey, this isn't what you sort of alluded to initially, and I think that's the biggest issue. You know, they sold us a picture, they sold us the colour scheme, they sold us the character, and now they're not providing that that colour scheme.
So to be clear, when you actually take a snapshot from what your TV looks like and what Triclops look like on the TV, it's definitely the darker green, it's definitely the olive complexion. Those prototypes, the paint masters that the Horseman did, is that spot on?
It matches that perfectly. It looks like it walked right off the screen, off the cartoon. Yeah. It's what we have on our DVDs and what we remember from childhood.
There is a movement, from what I've read on the forums, that says, well, actually, if you look at the Cell anime, if you actually get a cut of the Cell, it is a lighter green. It was darkened for TV screens.
Really?
Is there any? Well, there's an argument. There's some shots of
Shots of Cells. I have seen that argument.
It certainly is lighter. I don't know if it goes fully to the neon green, but I just wonder what sort of prompted the change, because it is a fairly dramatic change to make this late in the piece.
I think, to clarify, the green actually looks good.
It looks good,
but my issue with it is similar to what Ben was saying. This is this sub is advertised as a Filmation accurate line. That's what this is. And, you know, we're harping on Triclops, but you look at the shots of Man at Arms and Teela, and they look amazing, right? Let's not take away from that. I think they look really, really good. But yeah, the Triclops just seems such a departure. And you know what? If it was a run of the mill Triclops, you were trying to sell this to kids, that green is going to attract their attention rather than the olive stuff. But this is a Filmation line. If you're not going to make it look like Filmation, what are you doing?
I feel we're getting into a game of semantics. This is my sense, because Trent alluded to the movement, and I've seen people post since saying that, you know, there was a campaign to get Super 7 to change it, and that's what this is, a response to that, a fixing of what some fans saw were wrong with the prototype we were shown. So I feel we're arguing about semantics. A Filmation line is exactly what Frank said, is exactly how this has been built, but now we're getting into definitions. For me, a Filmation line is what I remember Filmation being. You know, I'm from childhood, what my DVDs tell me Filmation was. I can see for another group of fans, it's the Cells they have in their collection. So I do feel we're now getting into a game of semantics, and I do see the challenges around that. But, you know, I agree with Frank. I think he looks great. Just not sure that, well, he's not what I was expecting.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was trying to allude to, is that they sold us one colour, but then at the last minute, without really advertising it to anyone that the change was coming, they just said, here's in packaging,
here's what you're getting.
Yeah, and here's what you're getting. And it's like, hang on a second, up until you've been advertising this character for over a year now, because there's been so many delays, and not once did you say that the colours of Triclops are going to change. You know, you've been showing us this one coloured scheme, you know, a few different variations of, you know, how he's come along as progress has come, and then all of a sudden he's in box and he's a completely different colour. That's the biggest issue, I think, is,
All right, to maybe move on, I had a few points. I mean, I saw Lodar, Fangor and Quake, and to me they were just absolutely perfect. Man at Arms, I couldn't really fault. There's a bit of criticism of the hip joint that maybe they haven't got that quite right yet. The one, I mean, Hawk for me was probably, there's a bit of criticism over the face, maybe looks like it's fattened up in the jawline a little bit. And to me, the hip joint, I know it certainly has been improved in terms of the width of the hip, I think, when you actually look at some of the comparison shots. But the sort of the loincloth or cloth piece doesn't seem to cover the joints neatly from what I saw in the packaging. Yeah. So that was a little bit disappointing. But the Teela, I just wanted to shout out, the Teela face was immaculate.
Yeah,
and
for me, absolutely,
and it just
brilliant.
Captured, because that's, you know, sort of going back to having sort of the Teela gate, the Teela version that came with the Point Dread and the Talon Fighter.
Teela's face is perfect, in my view. I'm really happy with how her face came out. Like you, I'm really disappointed with Hawk, and I you know, these are pictures, and I meant to reiterate that before, they're pictures, you know. In hand, I might have a totally different response, as you often do with these things, so I don't want to say that I've made a final conclusion on these items. But yeah, I've got some concerns about how Hawk came out, and maybe even Teela around the hips. They're probably actually bigger disappointments for me than Triclops. When all the dust settled, I know Triclops was the one that got all the early attention. But again, I want to reiterate, these are pictures. They're not, you know, they're not necessarily my final conclusions. And I might feel very differently when I look at them. You know, we're talking about pictures that I've seen on my phone and on a computer screen and a TV screen. That's totally different. The amount of times I've had a figure in hand and thought that I had a totally different response.
For all we know, the photographer just could have used his flash on Triclops compared to the other figures. Like, you know, whether they're been photoshopped up to make it look more appealing and the actual figure is still the same. But we'll find out.
We will find out.
We're not too far away from finding out.
Very good. This was some exciting news out of Mattel. For those of you that follow DC and are interested in the DC multiverse line that is out at the moment, this is a 6-inch figures that Mattel puts out with their DC license. A new line is coming. And it's called World's Greatest, which is we'll talk. That's quite interesting with maybe who the character selection is for the first wave, the three figures. These are.
I'm actually very happy with this first wave.
I'm very happy too. Look, these are going to hit really quite quickly, I think, in February. Darren, did you want to take us through the figures we're getting?
Absolutely. Trent would know or despair over the fact that I've been banging on campaigning for this line really for the last decade since. Mattel did the Dark Knight movie Masters. I've been wanting something similar on previous DC films and television, and felt, you know, we got the multiverse stuff and the DC Cinematic Universe stuff and Batman 66. So now we're getting, we're going back into time, and we're getting a Linda Carter Wonder Woman. We are getting a television series Flash played by John Wesley Shipp, and I'm also delighted to say we're getting a Val Kilmer Batman, and I know how controversial that might sound, but I actually enjoy Batman Forever, and I actually enjoy the Schumacher fans, flaws aside, and what people might think of that. And I just want to go all in on this line. I want to go deep, villains, heroes.
A lot of potential, isn't there?
There is, you know, and you don't do a Michael Keaton Batman first. I've always said you hold something like that back, just like you hold a Christopher Reeve Superman back. If Mattel are smart, Brandon Roth will be out before Christopher Reeve.
Because that was my. I showed my wife the pictures, and her first reaction was, "Well, where's Christopher Reeve?" And I just went, "Oh, that's, you've got to build.
You've got to have a holy. You've got to have some holy grails to hold back. Otherwise, people are in for two waves." But you know, Jack Nicholson Joker, Michelle Pfeiffer Catwoman, DeVito Penguin. And these are the kinds of things that lend themselves to variants, because a lot of those characters that I just mentioned have multiple suits and multiple appearances. You know, think of a mime Joker.
Yeah.
Shaquille O'Neal still.
Well,
I would actually. I would actually buy
this line
that.
Is called the world's greatest.
Right. Yeah, I would actually slow down.
George Clooney Batman.
I said world's greatest.
I would actually buy both of those.
Yeah.
But I'd even go, and I think this is perhaps one of the worst comic book movies ever made, but I'd even go Halle Berry Catwoman.
Yeah.
Oof. What sort of
just for the costume alone?
What sort of price point are we looking at for these things?
I've heard these are more.
They're $30 US, so you get them here, they're going to be pushing that $40, which isn't You know, if you go in and buy Marvel Legends not on sale, they're sort of hitting that $40
yeah.
price point. Star Wars Black, $40. The DC Multiverse has been hovering at around the $25 Australian.
Yeah, these are going to have a bit more accessories. We're talking about interchangeable hands for these sort of things. So I'm thinking they could well be Mattel's DC Multiverse Black Series type entry. So I see them as a bit more than perhaps your typical DC Multiverse in terms of accessories. So you'd expect a higher price point. To me, if this is done right, this is going to be a very special line that comes not too often. Like Master Universe Classics was for Masters, you know. So I could be very happy to do this despite the higher price point.
Very good. I'm going to talk now about something that's close to my heart, and it's even closer because I did the pre-order today for Mythic Legions 2.0, which is essentially the All-Stars that they put out a fan vote for. So they're live, and I'll talk a little bit about that now. But what Mythic Legions did is they basically had the All-Stars 2.0 concluded, and the figures are announced. So basically, you went on and you could vote for a lot of the figures they'd made in the past that are no longer in production. And they're going to pick
the retired ones.
Yeah. And they go for a lot on the secondary market, This is, you know, to get it for the $35 US price point when they're sort of sitting at about $100 in that sort of territory is really nice for the horsemen to do this. So they sort of put it out there and said, look, fans, which ones do you want? Bit of controversy. It sounded like there was a bit of rigging going on from fans that they found. So I think what they came out and they said at the end, they said whether there was any tampering with the voting process or not, we know that there were some favourites that just got bumped out of place, and we always like to try and listen to the fans as much as possible. So for that reason, not only are we going to add the 7th and 8th place winners to the lineup, but you're also going to get more army builders. So basically, the announcement was made, and I'll read out the names. But you can basically jump on Store Horseman right now and you can pre-order them. They'll be available from 19th of the January through to the 9th of February 2018. And the winners were Vorgus Vermilius in the Blood Armor, who looks absolutely amazing. It's just like a really demon knight type looking thing. Attilo Leocia, Bog Goblin, Carpathius, Atlas the Conqueror. You got the standard Skeleton Legion Builder. These are at a slightly lower price point because they got the less paint applications. You got Pyxis, Endure, and Runeshaper. They also announced two additional army builders, which is the Dwarf. I think he's called the Silver Dwarf and the Crusader Knight. And you also get the Eagle and the Fan sculpted figure. So basically, I think when they had the Kickstarter, you could, if you hit a particular pledge level, you could get, it was quite a lot of money, but they would sculpt one in your likeness.
Clever.
So someone obviously paid the dough to get that done, and you're able to actually buy this figure now as well. So I can't think of the name off the top of my head.
So how many are you in for, Trent?
I went, they had an all-in option.
He's the design your own figure, basically. We're all getting Trent the accountant as an action figure.
No one wants that, do they? It's like,
the sword is mightier, the pen is mightier than
the sword. No, the calculator is mightier than the sword.
Comes with complete with calculator. So I went all in on the just one of each of the figures for both Advent of Decay and for All Stars. So if you're a fan of Mythic Legions, jump on the website. You've got 3 weeks to pick out the ones that you want from All Stars 2.0. Alrighty, now we got some pretty exciting news that we've touched on in the past, but we want to dissect it because we've got a bit more information now, and this is about the new Netflix show, and they are rebooting She-Ra, Princess of Power. So Netflix and DreamWorks have announced they'll be doing a She-Ra animated series, and we've got Noelle Stevenson, who will be the executive producer. This is the creator of Lumberjanes and Nimona. She's also worked on Marvel's The Runaways, issues 1-4 as the writer, and has done some writing on animation, including the reboot of DuckTales, amongst other animated projects. And Stevenson comes highly decorated. She's got 3 Eisner Awards under her belt already at the young, tender age of 26. So 2015, she won the Best New Series for Lumberjanes. and the best publication for teens aged 13 to 17 for Lumberjanes. And in 2016, picked up the best graphic album reprint for Nimona. And I just want to put that in context, that category that she won for the best graphic album reprint. 1991, Neil Gaiman won it for Sandman the Doll's House. 93, Frank Miller for Sin City. 99, it was Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale for Batman the Long Halloween. Alan Moore, 2000, for From Hell. 2004, you've got Paul Dini, Bruce Timm and others for Batman Adventures, Dangerous Dames and Demons. 2007, Absolute DC, New Frontier. That's Darwin Cook, the late Darwin Cook. And 2010, Alex Ross, Jim Kruger, Doug Braithwaite for Absolute Justice.
Oh,
that's a talented category, right? That's
an elite company.
Wow. Yeah.
When you say that, it's impossible not to get excited about the safe pair of hands that this young woman sounds like, and she is young. I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but I mean she's accomplished so much in such a short time. Absolutely. Awesome. But it couldn't be, you know, you have that sense that this could be something really, really special.
Yeah,
you know, the Shearer series that fans have waited so long for, which is just terrific.
Just a tweet from Stevenson: I've been working on this in secret for a long time with some really incredible talent for almost 2 years now. Stay tuned for more details over the next few months. I can't wait for you to see what we are doing. From DreamWorks Animation, they provided the following press release. The trailblazing property originally debuted in 1985 to satisfy overwhelming demand for a female fantasy series. With Stevenson's unique voice at the helm, fans are in store for an epic and timely tale that celebrates female friendship, empowerment, led by a warrior princess tailor-made for today. So maybe we'll just go around the room and just get your thoughts on sort of where you're at with this and excited. I know, Frank, Ben, you're both big fans of Voltron Legendary Defender, which is again released by, and it's on Netflix.
Yep.
I think, is it a DreamWorks?
Or DreamWorks is the studio behind it.
Yeah,
look, I think this looks great. And, you know, just going through the list of Stevens's, you know, the company that she's in just makes me even more excited. I think these guys, you know, they've been working on it for 2 years. It's not something they've just gone, oh, let's just slap it together because it needs to run alongside a movie. It sounds like they've done their homework. They've got the right people. There was the early pick that we talked about, I think, a little while back that sort of leaked. That gives you an indication of the style. Hasn't pleased everyone, but at the same token, I look at it and go, do you know what? You're talking about a single frame of animation. Until you see the thing in motion, you know, just hold back some of the crazy criticism that's getting. So, no, look, I can't wait. I just get it. I want it now in my eyeballs.
Just on that picture that's been floating around the internet that's had a bit of controversy. I think back when Nickelodeon grabbed the turtles and showed the animation of the turtles, and everyone went, oh, what are we looking here? And with their, you know, ultra animation,
they've got three toes.
And everyone went crazy, and now all the fans are saying, oh, this is amazing, you know, we want more. So I think until we actually see it, a story behind it and a bit more animation, and as you know, not just a picture, I think we can't really judge it until we see it for real. And even though that was like a sketch, it wasn't really
it
was a teaser at the most, just to sort of show that, you know, here it is, we're working on it, it's real. I couldn't agree with Ben and Frank and obviously Trent more. I'm beyond excited about this. Everyone knows what a Master of the Universe fan I am, and I consider Shira Princess of Power to be a big chunk of Master of the Universe. So I'm really excited to see where it's going. It sounds like, obviously, you know, we've got some very, very talented people working on this that have already been recognised quite early in their career. But the other thing that I think really grabs me is what I'm hearing about it. They're saying the right things. You know, this is going to be true. It's going to take things from the original. It's going to be inspired by the original, but it's also going to be made with modern audiences in mind, and it's going to suit the times. The same way that DC and Marvel and different properties have reinvented themselves to suit the era they're in. you know, Princess of Power and Masters of the Universe have to do the same thing too. Correct. It's part of the evolution. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles have done it successfully time and time again. So I feel that we're hearing the right noises from the right people, and you know, I'm very excited by this. I will be brutally honest, and this is, takes nothing away from Princess of Power, but I am hoping that there is some Master Universe connection in there, because to me that's a big part of what Jiro Princess of Power is. You know, Dora's powers come from Grayskull. You know, there's a connection, there's twins, there's twin planets, twin swords, twin castles. You know, to me that's a big part of what the property's history has always been. I'm not saying that I'm not open-minded enough to give something else a whirl if it isn't that, but that would be a huge head start into whether or not I fall in love with the series or not.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of those people that worries just about what it looks like. I see nothing wrong with what we've seen, the sketch we've seen, but I do look at everything. I look at animation style, story, voice acting. I look at so many different things when I make a choice about an animated series, and that determines whether or not I can want it. I personally didn't like, and this is going to sound controversial, I didn't initially like the look of Star Wars Clone Wars when that launched. That wasn't my animation style, but when I watched the show, I fell in love with it because I thought the stories were really good, you know, the voice acting was really good, and I got used to the style pretty quickly. You know, you can't just make a clear cut, this is terrible because I've seen a sketch. I mean, you can't, that's your choice, but you know, I'm not going to do
you
that.
You made
put
me
say
on something.
Yeah. I want to know the substance of the series, and that's going to take me a few episodes. Even if my Master Universe links aren't present, that doesn't mean there isn't a compelling series in its own right there. So, but I, you know, on the same token, I'd love it if there were. You know, that would just be.
I think there has to. Epic. There has to be some little nods. They'll mention the word Grayskull, and it'll be like, you know, in theory, if I was writing it for argument's sake, the season one finale, right at the end before the credits is you have a brother. Dun dun dun. Roll credits, like, and then that's your easy sort of backdoor pilot into whatever spin-offs it may be. Maybe
absolutely.
A movie, maybe a He-Man cartoon. Who knows? There's so many little links they could do.
Absolutely. The other thing I wanted to mention is I've really enjoyed the Voltron Netflix series as well. So, you know, this gives me a lot of excitement. I love the fact that they're tackling another 80s property.
Yeah. When I heard the news, I went out and tried to pick up everything I could that Stevenson had written.
Mm.
So I've now read The Runaways, the 4 issue arc. I couldn't get the first issues of Lumberjanes, so I've got, Pete was nice enough to give me some copies at Pulp Fiction. Thanks, Pete. Issues 5 to 8. And I picked up Nimona. The interesting thing about Nimona is I went in to Pete and I'm like, oh, I'm looking for this thing. It's called Nimona. He's like, Nimona, of course, you know, I'll see what we've got. Knew it straight away. He didn't have it, so I went to Greenlight Comics. Basically, there on display, first and foremost in their shop, there it was, Nimona, right there. So I just picked it up and grabbed that. Went into Dimmicks, looked in their graphic novel section. There it was. So it's obviously, it's in high regard.
In demand,
and it's
and in demand if Peter didn't have it, but the other two had it. Pretty prominently, by the sound of things, so that's terrific.
And I'm enjoying it. It's an interesting take. It's quite self-aware. I think I'd point that out. It's Nimona is basically set in almost a medieval time, but there's technology, and it's about, you know, the superhero and the supervillain. And Nimona, who's a shapeshifter, female shapeshifter, wants to align herself with the supervillain, and it's quite self-aware. Look, you know, you're the supervillain. You should be doing this and that. This is the way we should go about it. And he's like, no, you know, I'm a supervillain, but I've got my code, and it's sort of, it's lighthearted, but definitely a love for the genre comes through from what I've seen. So really exciting stuff, and looking forward to reading.
It sounds like a terrific read.
It is a terrific read, and I think it's probably in that, I'd probably class it in that early teen read. I think it would appeal, but certainly as a, you know, 36-year-old, I'm still enjoying it, you know. So
you're just a big girl at heart.
That's right, exactly. So now, great stuff there. Time to head into some more toy news, and I've been basically waiting and searching and looking for this news, and finally I saw some leaked images come up online. We're talking about Jurassic World and Jurassic Park. So we've talked about this in a previous podcast. Now Mattel have the rights, taken over from Hasbro. We've seen, I saw on Twitter and Instagram, some images start to leak. So I'll just go through what some of the things I saw. The Jurassic Park Jeep. I saw two toy versions of this. One looked like a figure compatible version. One was an RC, and then there was a full on riding, kids ride on vehicle. It looked so cool. Obviously, we're getting T-Rex. We'd seen some official teasers from Mattel on the T-Rex unpainted. The Jurassic World Gyrosphere, complete with, I think, a Chris Pratt. And you've got a number of the action figures, including Owen Grady, who's played by Chris Pratt on a motorcycle with his Velociraptor. And from what it looked to me, it looked like we're getting the long-awaited Claire Deering figure, who's played in Jurassic World by Bryce Dallas Howard. Several other dinosaurs. I think we saw the Mosasaurus, which is the big sea creature, spoilers now, that kind of jumps out and eats the Indominosaurus Rex in Jurassic World. And a few other sort of pretty standard sort of dinos. Images from Funko Pops and Lego sets have also leaked, so you can see those. And now, essentially, I'm just waiting for some high-res photos to come out.
It was only just a little, almost thumbnail-size thing,
And I think some of them were actually, that I saw, were taken from a camera on a screen. So they were pretty grainy.
Yeah, right.
Hugely excited for that. We might head over into some movie news or some fake news. So it was sort of funny. We've flip-flopped a little bit back and forward on Masters of the Universe news. So I'll just take you through where we're at or where we got to. So there was a bit of background to this, and I'll tell you where we've landed. But first up, about a week ago, we had Amiga Underground reporting an April 2018 target date to commence filming on a new Masters of the Universe motion picture being developed by Sony. There was no official comment by Sony, but they've still basically come out last year and said December 2019 is the release date. No move from that. Amiga Underground also said Lindsay Beer had a go at fine-tuning the script that was previously worked on by David S. Goyer, and Goyer is currently in the director's seat. No casting announcements, and so that's sort of where we got to. Then I reckon it was about 2 hours later, Umberto Gonzalez from Rap hit back and basically said, "Sorry guys, but that spring production start for Masters of the Universe going around isn't accurate," and he had a picture of Skeletor doing his, cackling laugh outside of Grayskull from the intro. Today, we got an update from Gonzalez on a tweet, and he said, little Masters of the Universe update for y'all, that for those that have been asking me, the film is in soft prep.
Is that a phrase? I've never heard it when describing a movie.
Could take that a lot of ways. meaning, definition of soft prep, meaning they're drawing up concept art and banging away at the screenplay. We should know in a few weeks if the film goes forward and gets greenlit by the power of Eternia. There were some shots of David S. Goyer over a computer with now what is becoming maybe the infamous battle suit Teela pick. And a few more of the more recent Masters of the Universe DC trade paperbacks sitting on the table.
Yep.
There was also another pick that David S. Goyer posted on his Twitter or Instagram account, basically with them looking over some sort of scenario shots, art books, we've got things like spaceships and sceneries and that sort of thing. So, so what do we think? Where are we at with this now? It doesn't look like it's any solid news. It's probably a lot more about production that we knew we were having up until this point. Any thoughts from you guys?
The whole thing, we just finished talking about how the way they've gone about the Shearer news and the people they're putting in charge of it, the way they've gone about all of that just fills you with a sense of confidence. This feels like the opposite of that. It's he says this and then she says that and then someone else comes out and says no, it's not happening. Meanwhile, there's been no real official word from the studios, who ultimately are the ones who bankroll this thing and make sure it goes forward. I actually looked into this when it originally broke about, was it Lucy Beer, was that? Yeah, her credentials. As far as IMDb is concerned, she's got nothing to do with Masters of the Universe. She's credited with a whole bunch of other stuff, as well as, interestingly, some of the Hasbro properties. I think she's credited as working on the Mask movie and a whole bunch of other things. And I know that ultimately is what's, you know, other people put up on the internet to a degree. And look, the Teela drawing that has done the rounds. Sorry, Ben's dealing with some kids. You might have heard some interruptions there, but we're very professional here at Toy Power. And yeah, look, that Teela thing, honestly, my first thought was it looks like a Predator. You know,
it's almost with an alien head.
It's got like an alien elongated head, a bit like the Predator would do. I sort of zoomed in a bit. It looked like it had like clawed hands, some sort of machine gun or weapon sort of mounted on the forearm.
I mean, it looked cool, right?
It looked cool.
Looked cool.
For another movie, you know, this is Teela, the captain of the guards. What the hell does she need a battle suit for? She is the weapon. Yeah. Like, yeah, I just very interesting. And again, it's taken out of context. It depends on how the script's written, all those sorts of things. And you think back to the aesthetic of the Dolph Lundgren He-Man movie and the shock trooper things they had there. Not very traditional Master stuff, but in the context of that movie, it works. So. Look, time will tell, but I don't have a great sense of confidence. You know, as we've said a couple of times on this show, show me that trailer and then I can, you know, have an informed opinion.
So I guess from my point of view, there's a few points I'd like to make. First point is, I think David S. Goyer could be a fantastic appointment. I really love his contribution to the Dark Knight trilogy, Man of Steel. I think he is really good with source material and being respectful. And no one probably wants a Master Universe film franchise in their lifetime more than me. I desperately want to see He-Man, She-Ra and company back on the big screen fairly regularly, not just as a one-off. So I'd love for something wonderful to come about like that. The picture we've seen, again, Frank's hit the nail on the head about context being critical. We don't know the context. But I keep thinking back to, and I'm going to talk about the Dark Knight trilogy again, about how we had false names given for movies that were in production. So Batman Begins was didn't even have Batman in the title. Dark Knight didn't. That's right. They were given artificial names so people didn't know what was going on. And I'm wondering whether or not this sketch of Teela really is Teela, whether or not that's real. Again, you know, I had that Predator reaction that Frank did. Having said that, I don't know the context. I don't know what the rest of the film looks like. Yeah. Again, She-Ra, Princess of Power and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and DC and Marvel and any property that survived the test of time, they do evolve to fit the times they're in. Just like you know, a lot of DC, including Batman, launched in the midst of World War II, and so did those times. You know, it survived because it's not being written like it's World War II anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm open to seeing what can be done with the property, and I think I've had this conversation online with Trent, Ben, and Frank, and other people. The most important thing for me is that the soul of the characters and the soul of the Master of the Universe story are intact.
Yeah.
The visuals, yeah, I'd like them to be recognisable, but it's not, you know, I'm not expecting them to look exactly like the toys did or exactly like they did in animation back in, you know, when we were kids.
No.
But I do want the souls and, you know, there are certain characteristics that make Teela who she is, make He-Man who he is, and make Skeletor who he is, and so on, that I think if you were to remove them, that wouldn't be the characters that we were talking about.
I think the one that gets me, and I understand your point about a different look, you know, you have to be okay with that. The best example I can think of that is the Michael Bay Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right? Now, that may not be everyone's favorite style, and okay, he's not everybody's favorite director and stuff, but you look at that, you look at those images, the style, the way they're done, and you know it's a Ninja Turtle straight up. You take away the title from that little picture we've seen of Teela, how do you actually know that's her? You know, it would be the equivalent of the turtles in Michael Bay's vision rocking up in mech suits, and that's exactly what, to your point, Darren, I'm okay with it looking different. Look, the MYP 2002 series proved that you can take the same concept, give it a different look without, but it has the recognizable, you know, looks to it. So, yeah.
I think there seems to be a couple of camps, but maybe you can break it down into two main camps. There are those that just sort of want Filmation aesthetic, so Filmation look and design. And this is not to take anything away from cosplayers that dress up in a very Filmation accurate style. But to me, it's just not going to hold up on a movie, right? Correct. If you put people in those costumes, and you know, they're very simple designs for animation. The colors are bright because they're based on toy lines. If you put that on the screen and translate it exactly, it won't work, in my view.
I think you're right. For one thing, it's a different medium. And for another thing, as we've all talked about, it's a different time.
Evolution, yeah.
Yeah, so I think you're right. You know, I've never been overly bothered by that. And as people know in this room, I actually enjoyed the Master Universe motion picture a lot. You know, and one of the problems people had with it, apart from the whole Earth thing, which even I had, you know, have issues with, is that the designs were so different. And that's still, you know, 30 years later, something that people still cite as that's what's wrong with the film. They didn't look like the toys, they didn't look like the cartoon. And yet, I tend to think that was actually what, you know, particularly Frank Langella Skeletor, that was one of the strengths of the film.
Absolutely.
And why people, you know, hang desperately hoping for a classics Langella Skeletor, because it is so different. It fits its medium, it fits its own universe. And I think that's what we need to see with this. This picture might, you know, who knows, David S. Goyer might be having a big laugh at the fan base right now, because, you know, he might know exactly why this is what it is and where that's going and what the context of the story, obviously he would, and what that all means. If it even survives the film, you know, and doesn't end up on the cutting room floor, you know what I mean? Because no one knows what's going to happen. And the interesting thing is that the next question is, are we getting a film? And I know we've heard varying reports as to, you know, license expiry dates and that. In my view, that can be quite disastrous if that's the kind of time frame we're working to. And I have fears, because obviously I remember 20th Century Fox's Fantastic Four film, and that was exactly that same problem. We need to use this, otherwise it goes back to Marvel.
Yeah. Well, especially the sense that they're looking at concepts and they're drawing up, you know, ideas, and they've got just over a year to finish the film. Like, that scares me.
And there's been no casting announcements yet.
That really scares me. That means they're better off just making an animated film, because then there's no way they're going to be able to...
I'd love an animated film, for the record.
I think that would translate better than a live action if given the timeline.
Very good. I don't know if Easter's getting close or not.
But I can tell you right now, as a bakery manager, it is closer than you think.
I keep getting my parents keep asking me when I go shopping to get these, what is it, lemon and lime hot cross buns from?
Oh, really?
No, we don't have them at Coles. Wow. Yeah. But, apple and cinnamon.
Apple and cinnamon, they're the ones. Yeah. Haven't been able to find them in any Coles.
Oh, come to my Coles.
Ben will hook you up. Yeah. So hot cross buns, they're in supermarkets. And in preparation for Easter, Boss Fight Studios are putting out an exclusive chocolate Bucky O'Hare figure. Limited to 4,000 pieces. Head over to their website to order it. Slightly more than the price point for a standard Bucky O'Hare. It's
$40. But it's chocolate.
No, it's not actually chocolate.
Oh, it's $40 for a chocolate. Far out.
It's made to look like chocolate. Oh, so the colour scheme is a chocolate. But it's got the same articulation, the same... weapons, accessories, faceplate, but it's basically all chocolate brown with white chocolate eyes.
So it doesn't even look like chocolate in foil.
It's not in foil. It's like an opened from the foil. And as you're about to bite into the delicious chocolate.
That is really awesome. Two of my all-time favourite things side by side, toys and chocolate. You know, what more could you want?
I'm just picturing the managers go down to the factory floor going, all right, guys, swap out the moulds. We're going to run chocolate through the machine now. And the guys are going, what?
You can't do that.
We're going to make them all brown.
I'm not tempted to buy the chocolate Bucky O'Hare figure, it did remind me that Series 2 is now available for pre-order. So I did go over to the website and ordered that. You get the Phasing Jenny, a camo sort of version of Bucky, and Deadeye Duck is showing up in this wave as well. So there's three figures, and they've done a bundle now. So it's $35 each, or you can get all three for $100. So you can save some ass on that, $5. So, very good. Hey, that wraps news, unless anyone's got anything else, Ben?
So, Transformers Masterpiece news. The next character to be released is MP34S. Another Beast Wars character. The figure is a black repaint of previous MP34 Cheetor. It is a homage to the old Takara Beast Wars D7 Shadow Panther, not to be mixed in with the Panther from Masters. The original toy was also a straight reprint of the first Beast Wars Cheetah toy. This new Masterpiece figure will include a new battle mask, which is also a reference to the original Beast Wars mold of the character, and with the unused communicator armband that was a test shot Cheetah had, in addition to multiple faces. So get on that if you're a diehard Beast Wars enthusiast or just a diehard MP fan.
They are beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Thanks for that, Ben. That's awesome. At this point, we'll head away from latest news, and we want to talk about Netflix some more, because I think December 22 last year, they dropped 4 episodes from the new series, The Toys That Made Us. And boy, I got Netflix just for this show. So I signed up, and I'm loving Netflix, as incidentally. I don't know why I didn't get it earlier.
Seriously, on side note, Netflix is awesome.
Netflix is brilliant.
You've got, what's the other one? Stan. I just don't like the menu.
Yeah.
Like, the menu just isn't cool.
But the content as well.
Yeah, and
Netflix, I'm just sitting there going, I want to watch that, I want to watch that. Everything I want to watch. Yeah. Stan, I was like, I've kind of seen everything now.
Yeah. Netflix, I've got about 7 shows I'm halfway through. Yeah. I'm like, right, I'm just going to finish this one, and then I'm going to watch that one and that one and that one. No new shows until I've watched the last 7.
Oh. Sure.
But this is a brilliant series, I have to say. So we've got 4 episodes that have released. It's going to be an 8-part season. So we've got Star Wars, Barbie, Masters of the Universe, and G.I. Joe. They all dropped on 22nd of December, as I said. We've got another 4 unreleased episodes that should be released in spring 2018. So what's that, sort of April-ish, March, April here, just to translate, because we've got different hemispheres. And it will consist of Transformers,
yes.
Lego, Hello Kitty,
and
Star Trek.
Well, 3 out of 4 is not bad.
Yeah. I'm fascinated. I might talk a bit more about it in later scores, but I've sort of gotten into collecting a bit of
got him, yes.
a bit of Star Trek.
So is that going to be a segment in latest toy pitch? You're going to do Hello Kitty?
Yeah, that's right.
It'll be Hello Trenty.
That's right. But Star Trek, it's fascinating, because I picked up a fair bit of the early 90s Playmates Star Trek figures, and gee, I tell you what, they don't go for a lot of money.
Nope.
They're basically dirt cheap. I mean, mint on card, they're sort of $5 a figure. what I'm finding. So I'd be fascinated to see, and I know it's not just Playmates that does Star Trek.
I imagine the Gloop line's going to get a bit of love, which I remember seeing in the Woolworths variety store in the Adelaide CBD back in the late 80s, I believe, when that series was just sort of launching.
Yeah.
You know, which is interesting to sort of see how the license sort of moved. But yeah, the Playmate Star Trek line's huge.
It's huge.
Over
300 figures. There's a lot of different variants, different packaging versions. But they're really, I love the aesthetic, because it's Playmate. So it would almost blend in with Turtles.
It does blend in with Turtles. I can remember them being side by side on the pegs, much like the Dick Tracy line blends in with Turtles. You know, Playmates. I was thinking about it, you know, as we were doing a bit of research on another project, just how Playmates were cranking out toys in that sort of period, you know, in the 90s, because they cranked out a Turtles line which was almost as long as their combined Star Trek stuff, and they're just, like, churning out action figures like perhaps no one else.
Toxic Crusaders.
Toxic Crusaders and Dick Tracy with their short-run stuff, but obviously their Star Trek and their Turtles, my God, who would have rivaled them back then? Maybe Kenner with Star Wars. You know, there wouldn't be much else that would have rivaled that.
No, and it's a fascinating. We can get into this maybe once we've seen the Star Trek episode. But I'd just be fascinated to know, like, you know, this is a property that's been around since the Roddenberry days.
So 1960s.
1960s, right? Yeah. So you think in terms of collectability, it would have spades on something like a Turtles, yet. From what I'm seeing and a little bit of research I've done, they're poles apart. And I'd love to unpack that or what's driven almost the value proposition now for some Star Trek.
I've got a mate that's a huge Star Trek fan, and he collects a lot of Star Trek stuff, but he doesn't collect toys at all. And it could just be, and obviously he's only one mate, it's far from a wide scale research project or analysis, but it could just be that Trekkie fans and, you know, aren't action figure collectors.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, it's a possibility.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Yeah, and yeah, I think it's absolutely fascinating, and it'll be fascinating to crack that open when they launch, you know, the next four episodes, because, yeah, that is interesting. Because obviously they were selling at the time.
Mm.
Otherwise the line wouldn't have lasted
300 odd figures.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's massive.
Yeah, just to follow up on that,
maybe people burnt out on it.
Yeah, I classify myself, you know, if people say you have to pick one, Star Wars or Star Trek, I fall down on the Star Trek side of that. So, but that said, even with all my stuff, I don't think I've ever owned a Star Trek figure in my life. And yet I was also at the height of my fandom, one of these people who would get the thing for the news agency each week, whereas you pay your, you know, they sucker you in with, oh, the first thing is $4, and then it's like $12 each episode after that. The big file facts. And and speaking as a Star Trek fan, I think in general, and again, sweeping statements, small sample size, all that sort of stuff, they're very detail-oriented people, and you want the big books and fold-out things that tell you how the Enterprise worked, how a phaser works. I don't care about having an actual model Enterprise. Okay, I did, but...
it's intellectual. Yeah. It's intellectual. Correct. And again, number of the Star Trek fans that I know, that's why I like Star Trek better than Star Wars. Star Wars is muscle and battle and fighting and violence. Yeah. And Star Trek is using your brain to solve problems.
Yeah.
And that's why they don't necessarily like the reboot movies
they're all action.
Yeah, because they're all action films.
But you're right. For a line to have 300 figures, somebody must have been buying the things. So, yeah, we'll find out.
Okay, so I thought we'd just go around the room and maybe just get our quick thoughts on the series as a whole for those of you that have seen it.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. I wasn't particularly didn't love the Barbie one. I felt it just rehashed the same story over and over again. I found the Star Wars one really interesting. The G.I. Joe one I was blown away by, because I've never been a huge G.I. Joe fan, but I found that extremely interesting, and I was just blown away by how at one point they're like, they went to the boss or whatever, then they're like, we need to cut back on prices, we need to make these figures more expensive because, you know, they're going to cost too much. And they're like, oh no, we can't sacrifice paint apps or anything, that would be detrimental to our toy brand and things. Why don't we just make one character with no paint apps, and that will cost out the fact that the other characters have more paint apps. So they made this one black character named, you know, oddly enough, Snake Eyes, and oddly enough, that character is now one of the most fan-demanded, fan-favorite anything, of them all. And I have to admit, myself not being a huge G.I. Joe fan, I do have a Snake Eyes character. He is my favorite G.I. Joe character, and just to find out the origin of him, that he was just a throwaway
cheap package,
black mold, and good luck, you know, selling this.
Yep.
The rationality of their thought process, and, you know, it's just amazing. What I really loved about the Star Wars one was they went into someone's collection and showed off the collection. I felt that was missed completely in the Masters one.
Yeah, yeah.
In the Star Wars one as well, they talked about bootlegs and things. I thought that was extremely missed on the Masters one, which I was pretty disappointed about. G.I. Joe was, you know, a bit best of both worlds, I thought. I thought that was really cool. Yeah.
Go down.
I really absolutely loved all four of them for different reasons. Obviously, people know Master Universe is very close to my heart. Yeah, look, I loved them all. I thought the Star Wars one did they all feed off each other brilliantly, I thought. The Star Wars one did a really great job of conveying how the vintage Star Wars line changed action figure collecting and what it was, and set the building blocks for that. The Barbie one, I thought, did a really great job of laying the groundwork for not only Barbie, but the history of Mattel, which meant that the Master Universe one didn't have to dwell on that. It had already been done in episode 2. So I thought that was terrific. And that I found the story around the Barbie one I don't collect Barbie. I've never have. Not saying there's anything wrong with guys doing that, but I've never done it. But I found the Barbie one really fascinating and really quite tragic at times. I thought the story behind the scenes, what was going on with some of the people and perhaps to the point even more so their family members and what they actually lived through as a result of the creation of Barbie, and that I found at times to be quite moving and quite tragic. I found that fascinating. I also found it fascinating how different things, and I don't want to spoil it for people, but how different people were welcomed back to Mattel despite some of the things that went on. Because I guess they did sort of help set the company up and pioneer that. I also found the name origins for both Barbie and Ken really interesting. For me, Masters of the Universe was probably the standout because of how I'm connected to that franchise as a lifelong fan. And that I agree with what everyone's said about what Ben said about not seeing people's collections and how that could have been something that could have been really great. I would have loved Masters of the Universe to have been two or three parts, and I guess that's the thing. You know, being a Masters of the Universe fan, you can never get enough of it, so I was really mindful of that factor as well. The other thing I wanted to go back to just on the Star Wars thing is I really love seeing the Kenner officers. Mm-hmm. Again, I actually said to Trent, you know, I'm actually finding this quite moving. I'm almost tearing up seeing it, and I never worked there. But, you know, when you think about the kinds of lines that Kenner produced and the kinds of history that took place there, for that building to still be there, for that floor to be vacant, you know, that was, and seeing staff members going back there, that was a really, really powerful image for me. So I really, really took that on board, and that had an impact on me. And it's made me want to know more about the history of all the toy companies that we follow. Yeah. And I never really, really fell in love with G.I. Joe like a lot of people did. I appreciate it and I respect it, and you know, I think the franchise has a lot to offer, but I never collected it as a kid. But I found that documentary fascinating, the history of G.I. Joe, how it started in the 60s, how it was revived and brought to a new audience, and again modernized like we've talked about on mm-hmm. this episode to fit the times, and I thought that was fascinating and the history of it all. I thought it was terrific.
I have not seen it.
Okay.
Slap.
I know. December and January has just been an incredibly busy time. Yeah. And even just the other day, my wife was like, we should get Netflix. I was like, really? Where's this come from? Oh, there's that Toys That Made Us. I'm just like, oh, I love you.
Yeah, for me, I love the series. Brilliant. Can't wait for the second half and obviously for a second series, hopefully, to be greenlit. Took me a while to get used to the narration style. And I guess there's a fair amount of the narrator interrupting and explaining things and graphics popping up, and they've even taken like people, what they're saying. There's a bit where
not
necessarily out of context. There's the bit with, you know, you've got the whole in Masters, you've got Mark Taylor and what's the other guy's name, the creators,
Roger Sweet.
And Roger Sweet's talking about like the names they were coming up when they're sort of, what were you guys smoking? And then it sort of goes to this Cheech and Chong style of he's going bong and they slow it down. And then there was a bit with James Etox describing a character and they change his voice and his eyes glow red. And so there was a lot of that sort of interesting.
That seems to be humor that's followed the property ever, you know, for a long, long time. And I guess, you know, anyone that's not a fan of it automatically seems to think that. I can remember in the 1990s having friends from high school coming around and seeing my vintage Masters of the Universe toy collection because, you know, I was going through one of my phases where, you know, I don't care what people think of me, I'm going to display them in my room, and if you don't like it, go home. You know, kind of attitude. And people were like, oh, these are really cool, but what on earth were they smoking?
Yeah.
And that was literally what one of my friends said to me. It wasn't a shot at the line. It wasn't a shot at them. It was almost in awe. What were they smoking?
Yeah.
Can I have some kind of thing? You know. So that seems to be how normal people that are not fans seem to respond to the line.
I understand that. The point I guess I was trying to make was that they took that and they kind of meddled with it
and animated it,
which is unusual. Or I'm not used to necessarily seeing in a documentary.
Yeah.
I'm used to seeing the story tell itself. And I think maybe this is this brings it maybe into a bit more of a mainstream.
I think so.
Adds a bit of humor, adds a bit of entertainment.
Was that sorry to cut you off? Was that sort of animation on the other episodes or just the Masters?
It was
one?
More so in the.
It
Masters
was more so in the Masters Universe. It's definitely a lighter tone to the Masters Universe one, and a lot of Masters fans have reacted to that on social media and online.
Yeah.
And I was sort of going in quite worried because I'd heard all that response before I'd seen it that they were just going to be making fun of, you know, my Masters of the Universe, as I see it.
Yeah, but you can't. I mean, yes, the names might seem funny, and yes, they were taken tongue in cheek even by the creators and the designers. But when you make over $1 billion, I mean, who's laughing? I mean, you know.
Well, I can remember on one of the documentaries to the DVDs for the Filmation cartoon that one of the writers, Michael Reeves, he actually wrote just incidentally for the Filmation He-Man and Masters of the Universe cartoon, the New Adventures, and the Mike Young Productions. The only writer to write on all three He-Man cartoons. And he said that he personally found the He-Man character, or the He-Man name, strange. You know, it's almost like he is repeating itself. But it tested really well with kids in market research, and I wonder how many of those names that we got were names that tested really well with kids. You know, he's a character and here's all these names. Which one do you like the most? Mm. Think about, you know, in the She-Ra Princess Power cartoon, for example, Tongue Lash is called Tongue to start with. He then becomes Tongue Lash. Snout Spout's Hose Nose, then Snout Spout. Think about that, and maybe there was a selection sheet of names. Which one do you think best fits this character?
From the way that the guys talked about it, they were just flying by the seat of their pants. They'd
absolutely
go into the boardroom and say, you know, we've got this character and we're going to produce this character. Well, you know, how are you going to back this up? Well, we've got mini comics. How's a 5-year-old going to read a mini comic he can't read?
We've got animation too.
Like, you know, just on the spot without even locking in anything.
Yeah.
They're just making it up as they go along. So I think, you know, I think they just went to they might have gone home, said to their own kids, you know, what do you think of He-Man? What do you think of Power Fist Man? What do you think of this? And they would have said He-Man, and that would have been enough. Like, that would have been the whole audience that way previous, you know, way before the internet, way before any of that sort of thing. Their outlook would have been very shallow, so to speak, in my personal opinion and belief.
Absolutely.
The thing I really liked that they did, and they did it for the Barbie episode and the Star Wars episode from memory, is they did some reenactments. So they actually got actors to reenact, I guess, pivotal sort of moments
in history.
One of them is
didn't they do that with the G.I. Joe one as well?
They did as well. You're quite right.
Yeah, because right. You know, those significant moments in history were fascinating.
Yeah, the Star Wars one was brilliant because what they did is, without spoiling it too much, it was the Kenner designer had been invited onto the set of Star Wars, and they showed basically him coming in, and they had the Millennium Falcon up on a blue screen essentially, and they were shooting it, and he's like, oh my god, look at that, and they're seeing these designs for the first time. And they're like, you should have been here yesterday, we blew up the Death Star. But it was done real. I mean, you could have believed that was an actual sort of, you know, footage from the time. It was done really nicely.
Cool.
It certainly was. And talk about Debbie Reynolds' daughter playing the princess, you know.
Yeah.
So all that sort
all
of...
all that stuff was
all
there.
That sort of thing was
like they would have been talking sort of in
back in
the
day.
Time.
Yeah. And the other thing that I thought was fascinating that I meant to mention and completely slipped my mind was the Kenner supposedly not actually being the licensee of Star Wars, but the toy owner in perpetuity, had they kept a regular, you know, annual payment scheme going, and the fascination of seeing how that was was unknown to them, how that unraveled, and then how what that meant in terms of reacquiring it years later.
Yeah, that's fascinating, and I think so essentially what Darren's saying is that there was I'll get to the clause in a sec, but Star Wars missed the boat with a lot of the major toy manufacturers for whatever reason. They couldn't get Mattel. That Mattel didn't want it.
Mattel couldn't afford it was the story. And I think if you go back to Barbie and you see the financial trouble that Mattel was in at that time as a result of certain incidents that were going on behind the scenes, you can see what we've heard before about Mattel not being able to afford it. You can actually
it makes sense.
You can see in part two, the Barbie one, why they couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating.
And I think at the end of the day, they were sort of between a rock and a hard place, and they almost had to go with Kenner.
That's right. And Mego Corporation didn't want it.
Yeah, and I think they were out of business shortly after as well.
They were.
So you had quite a good royalty rate. I think it was 2.5 cents that basically Kenner had to pay. And like Darren said, they got it due to a clause. They got it into perpetuity. They had to either pay 2.5 cents of the figures that they sold, or a minimum of $10,000. And that would guarantee them. So if they produced no figures in a year, cut LucasArts a check, Lucasfilm a check for
$10,000,
and you've got the license for perpetuity. And I think what happened was when Hasbro bought out Kenner, or potentially even before that, they weren't as savvy on the details, and they basically forgot to send this check in. And when George came out and said, all right, I'm going to do some prequels, they kind of looked at it and said, and I'm going to put it out to tender. They basically, the head of Hasbro at the time said, we have to get this, and no matter what the cost.
Yeah, I think this was probably actually a bit before the prequels. This was probably Power of the Force special edition sort of time frame when they were trying to get toys Star Wars back into toy shelves. And yeah, suddenly George was George Lucas was the one with the bargaining power.
Yeah,
let's just say he probably got rewarded for the enduring the poor deal
of the
70s and 80s. In the 90s, he was rewarded for enduring that.
Well, there's some statistics in it. I'm not going to get the numbers right off the top of my head, but it's something like over the films that we've had to date, the Star Wars films have made whatever it is, $2 billion. The toys have basically doubled that number, so it's sort of $4 billion in toy sales. Now, toys are a big part of the equation.
Absolutely. Would have been a big part of Disney's purchase or decision to purchase Lucasfilm, the license to be able to, you want to make new Star Wars films, and obviously you're going to do well at the box office and you're going to sell the Blu-rays and DVDs pretty easily. But on top of that, you've got the license for all this other stuff that companies are going to pay top dollar for.
And also with the Masters one, they talked about how because I knew a lot of the backstories and things, so that was wasn't really new to me, but the fleshing out of the year by year sales was new to me, and I found that really, really interesting. So they're like, the first year they made, and I'm not going to get this right either, numbers, they're like made $3 million. The next year they made $20 million. The next year they made 50, so forth and so forth, and then in wave 7 they're like made $700,000, and they're just like,
it just went,
oh no,
just dropped off the cliff, severed
the ties with everything, just cut the line and said that's it, it stopped, nothing. Wow. And that's why that last those last batch of merchandise, all that is so super rare, because they just pretty much
hit the emergency. Back is the story.
Just hit the emergency stop button at the factory and said, that's it, Masters is dead. And that was a bit of a shock to me.
Wasn't quite the same shock to you as it was to me. I'll tell you a little story. Back when, and some people are not going to appreciate this, back when the 1987 film came out, I went to see it and I decided I wanted a Gwildor figure. And we went to Coles at Hollywood Plaza, which was my local Coles. And they used to have a huge Master Universe section. And we'd only been there a couple of days or a few days before. And we were surprised, because they'd always been strong with the Master Universe line. We were surprised they were off the store floor. Mum and I asked, well, have you got any Master Universe figures? And he said, they're out the back. Which one are you looking for? And I said, Gwildor. They were really prominent in Wave 6. And Mum and I have been, for a number of years thinking, what happened? Well, this is with the benefit of history and hindsight, and seeing that the line, died not long after that. What was that all about? And I've heard stories around the internet and even from Mattel employees that say that product was sent back from retailers. And I think Coles Hollywood was sending them back because the line wasn't selling. And I say that as someone who's desperately still to this day heartbroken that would have been the case. But that to me doesn't surprise me that it was sort of, that was happening. It did at the time, because I never thought the line was going to end, and I could have kept going with it forever in perpetuity. But to borrow another phrase from another documentary, but so that to me didn't surprise me, but it does sadden me. And you hear these stories from Mattel employees who say, as if it's nothing in the world, you know, all that stuff got melted down. We used the plastic for other toys. Cool. And you think that just breaks your heart when you think it's Sorcerer's, it's Clamp Champ, Ninja, Scare Guy, all the rare stuff. You know, if there's any truth to that at all, that just breaks your heart.
It's a business to them. It's our childhood to us. Like,
yeah. I know, but I mean, I look at it both from a child perspective, but also from an adult collector perspective about what those figures now go for.
Mm. Yeah. Just quickly, one point, I'll ask then a quick question around the room. One thing I found fascinating was how the Star Wars scale was worked out. Yeah. Because basically, they if you think about the era, so 1977, 78, when the figures actually came out, a lot of what the scale of figures that we're used to is things like G.I. Joe, which is your larger sort of 8-inch figures.
And Mego,
you know, cloth-based, G.I. Joe, bigger. G.I. Joe in the biggest scale. But they wanted to do vehicles because they knew vehicles were such a big part of Star Wars. So there was you weren't going to make an X-Wing the size of your bed to fit in a, G.I. Joe size figure.
Well, people wouldn't be able to afford it.
Couldn't make it. So they realized really early on they needed to make a smaller scale. And they said, well, what's the scale? And they asked the CEO, and he basically goes, I want him to be this big. And he just stuck out his thumb and his forefinger, and apparently he had these really big fingers. And the designer, he just kind of got out his steel ruler and measured the gap, and he goes, I've got exactly 3 3/4 inches. And that was it. That's how they came up with the scale.
And that's a scale that still lives on to this day, not just for Star Wars, but for so many other lines.
He's just pulled it out of nowhere, right? Like, no thought. Yeah. This is it.
But that's the toy industry. We talk about Masters being seat of your pants, but it seems like the more we see this, there's been a lot of happy accidents along the way for so many lines.
You could just see that CEO going to like a Comic-Con or whatever, and like, who are you? Just holds up his fingers. I'm that guy.
Quickly, just going around the room, we'll make it quick. What do you think this series means for toy collecting in general?
I think it's fantastic. Previously we haven't really had many toy orientated shows. Mm. We've had the Toy Hunter and things. Unfortunately, that hasn't really been aired in Australia. I've had to you watch them on YouTube or borrow them from other people that have got them on a USB or something. And for that reason, I haven't watched the entire series. That also has that sort of degrading humour in it as well. So to see this humour on this the toys that made us, it doesn't come as a surprise, but it's also a little bit frustrating that that continued demising humour is still evident in a, when they're trying to make a serious show. I don't really appreciate that. But anyway, I think it's fantastic. I think there's, they're just touching the surface in their 8 episodes that they're, they've launched. There's thousands more. We've got lots of people on the internet requesting lots of shows and things like that. And, I really, really hope that it being on such a prominent
platform
as Netflix, that it's going to reach not only us as collectors, but the half-party interested people that might be gamers or might walk past a Zing store every now and again and pick up the odd random figure just to relive their childhood and be happy with one figure in their collection.
Yep.
Might touch on the surface of those people, might also grab the parents and be like, oh, when I was young, I collected Master Universe. Hey, child, come and watch it with me, have the sort of a family reunion around the around the box watching, the history. So I think it's great. I think they could have been a little bit more family friendly with the swear words and things in it, and that ridiculous sort of melted sex doll in the background, which honestly took my I was gobsmacked.
That's actually a collector's item. There's like only 2 of them in the world or something.
I agree with you. I'll buy sex dolls. I'll melt them down and sell them at half the price.
Look, I don't disagree with you. I said at the time, I'm sure it's fine art and it's classy. It's too classy for me, was what I said. I don't get it, but look, I think all jokes aside, this series is terrific for not only collectors, but I think for anyone who has a memory of Masters of the Universe or G.I. Joe, Transformers, Star Wars, Barbie, whatever might come next. You know, my mum's really keen to see the Master Universe one, and you know, I'm sure I can force her into watching the Star Wars and Barbie and G.I. Joe as well, for that matter. So, you know, I think it's terrific. Anything that makes it more mainstream, anything that sort of creates a reminder or a refresher, I think is really good. Yeah, I don't see a negative. I get the humour and I get that sort of stuff. I tend to think we're while away from breaking through that. I think society's moved forward in leaps and bounds in how they saw this stuff even 10, 15 years ago. So to get to where we are now, where this sort of stuff is being produced, is terrific. I've talked before about, you know, the influence, I think, of, you know, the Nolan Batman films and the Marvel Cinematic Universe and, you know, the X-Men films and all these things, Spider-Man, all these things that have come along, Big Bang Theory, that have helped get it into the mainstream and get people that you wouldn't expect aware of it. So I just think this is another step. One day we will get serious ones, Ben, where people don't laugh and make fun of it. But think about how far we've come.
Yeah.
And
I've got to give respect where respect's due. Like, I've seen on their Facebook feed that, you know, people send them in collection photos and they give a big shout out to the rest. That they forward it on to the rest. And I think that's fantastic that, you know, they're taking...
That sort of engagement.
That engagement that, you know, hey, we're not just hitting the big... You know, the, what is it, John Sears Ranch or whatever, the Star Wars Ranch. You know, we're not just interested in the big, you know, that one guy that's got the Guinness Book of Records of Star Wars toys. We're also looking at, you know, people like the us in the room, like, hey, check out my, you know, Matchbox collection or something, and giving that a big plug.
Absolutely. I've always said it's not what you have, it's how you feel about it.
Yeah.
You know, what it means to you, what it means about you being a fan, and that stuff's priceless. Yeah. You can't measure that.
And just on that note, everyone listening who may have not watched it or wants to watch it again, really take note in the credits section. They actually show people's collections. So if you, and especially like I've watched the Masters one, the credits, you know, a few times now, and they give nods to people's collections, and there's some extremely impressive collections out there, as well as G.I. Joe and Barbie and Star Wars. So, you know, the credits alone, I could watch, you know, like over and over again, the episode, because I almost pause at the screen just to
have a
look.
They've
got that, you know. Oh, is sweet. That two USS flags in that bedroom? You know? Like, just it's just insane, you know.
Cool.
And it's cool to see, because everyone can have the same toys, so to speak, but it's how everyone
presents
display it and presents it and things, you know. That's always fascinating in itself. So, check that out.
Very good. Just quickly, I'll wrap with saying I was listening to the latest Breaking the Panel episode, and Phil, there's a section basically where they talk about what they've been watching or playing, and Phil said, I've been watching, you know, he had one thing to talk about, and he said, I've been watching this great show, The Toys That Made Us. So that's phenomenal that it's getting that sort of response. Great to see it resonating with people, seeing a lot of comments from people, how much they enjoy it. Just quickly, I'll touch on a few comments that have come from Brian Vokvols, who's the director of The Toys That Made Us. Interesting question, how did you pick what toys to investigate? So if you're thinking about what might come next, they have four criteria as a rough gauge. They basically look at toys that have been in production non-stop since inception. Is it iconic enough to be on the Mount Rushmore of toys? Is the story any good? And does it have a rabid fan base? What's going to be next for season two if it gets greenlit? So from what I could gather, Ninja Turtles is like a definite.
Yeah.
Superheroes in some way, whether it be like, you know, maybe they'll just do superheroes and it'll be DC, Marvel, etc.
So in a very broad sense.
In a broader sense.
Yeah, they could do too half much an hour each. Yeah.
My Little Pony as well was sort of a definite. So My Little Pony would definitely...
That doesn't surprise me. Yeah, yeah, it's huge. And you got bronies as well. And then as we know...
it's still,
you know,
going. That's the thing. Yeah.
Shout out to our good friend Davey, who would know what I mean by you know, the panel of bronies.
Hardcore.
That I'm in here with.
He's got one of those hats with a little unicorn horn on it, doesn't he?
Davey has. I thought he took a photo of you guys wearing
one. So he's gripping it tight. Do we have any plans? This came from Kaiju Moon 25. Do you have any plans to cover Japanese kaiju monster toys. So shout out to Osti.
Oh, yeah.
Brian Vice came back and said if we get more episodes ordered, there's a very good chance we go back and do that, back to Japan, because obviously they're over for the Transformers episode, interviewing Takara, and I think for My Little... Hello Kitty, sorry, My Little Kitty. The other question was, are you going to do retailers? And he said, we would love to do an episode about the retailers and how much the market has changed. Go back to our episode, The Decline in Toys. And then he said, and how much Amazon has changed everything. So he's quoted Amazon as being a major change, which we didn't put in our episode. So maybe they'll get to that. Final one, Hectoid. This was really interesting. He asked, if the show continues on for more seasons, crossing my fingers, will you be looking at smaller toy franchises like Sectors and Silverhawks? Is the plan to stick with longer running, more popular brands? Brian Vock Weiss came back and said, it all depends on how many seasons we get. If we get a big order, then we would absolutely look at the less iconic toy lines, as long as the stories and people behind those lines are interesting. So really, the message that came across loud and clear was, if we get more seasons, there's really nothing that's off the table.
Absolutely. I'm just thinking outside the square, I guess, you know, if they don't think there's an episode for, say, Silverhawks on its own, they could do, you know, smaller Kenner lines.
Thunderhawks and
Tiger Sharks.
They could do it that way, or they could do smaller Kenner lines, or however they want to approach it. But, you know, I think that sounds terrific that it's really up to us, you know, fan community and people outside the fan community who might want to what this series as well, to keep it going, to support it and stream it, and, you know, hit the desired number of views, I guess.
Mm. So if it is up to us, Brian, if you're listening, give us a shout out, because we've got lots of ideas, mate. We'll help you.
And you want to, if you ever want to come on the show, Brian, you know,
collection picks. My God, look at where we're sitting right now. Like,
that's it. And well, we're trying something new. I don't know, we talked about it, but hopefully you get to sort of see where we record, man, if you're going to watch this on YouTube. So if you're listening to us as you normally do on the podcast, check over the links that we'll put up and try and watch a few of the segments.
Trying to do
YouTube,
the video blog YouTube thing. Yeah. So let's see how that goes.
We're literally in toy heaven as we speak.
Yeah. Very good. Look, thanks everyone for your time this evening to record this episode. It's been great having this conversation. We've probably gone a little bit over time, so apologies for that. Thanks listeners very much for tuning in or watching in, and we hope to see you around the toy aisles.
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast, at Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us, ToyPowerPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
Oh yeah, there's power.